Hello, and welcome to This Thing Called Life, a podcast dedicated to sharing stories about acts of giving, kindness, compassion, and humanity. Your host, Andy Johnson, will introduce you to powerful stories about organ, eye, and tissue donation from individuals, families, and healthcare teams whose experiences will inspire you and remind you that while life is hard, unpredictable, and imperfect, it's also beautiful. We are so happy you're here. Now, let's join the show.
Welcome to This Thing Called Life. I'm your host, Andy Johnson. This is episode number 2, and the episode name is Help, I Need an Organ Transplant, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. In today's episode, we're going to talk with Barry Massa, Executive Director of Life Center Organ Donor Network in Cincinnati, Ohio, about what it's like to recover organs and tissues during a pandemic.
This episode is brought to you by Life Center. You have the potential to help save and enhance the lives of others, those who suffer from chronic illness or the effects of traumatic events. Statistics have shown that a new name is added to the national waiting list every 10 minutes. You have the opportunity to help others and save lives. You have the power to donate life. By designating your decision to become a donor, you have the opportunity to change the lives of many and save up to 8 lives. Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana say yes to donation by registering to become an organ, eye, or tissue donor today. Go to lifepassiton.org for more information. Thanks to Life Center for their continued support.
So right now, I'd like to introduce Barry, and we're going to learn a little bit about organ and tissue donation and what the role of a Life Center is. And so I'm going to turn it over to Barry now so he can tell us a little bit about himself and talk to us about Life Center. Welcome, Barry.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for having me today. So as Andy said, I'm Barry Massa. I'm the Executive Director for Life Center Organ Donor Network. I've been with the organization 16 years. I've been the Executive Director for 12 of those years. I started as our CFO. Life Center is the federally designated organization that handles all organ and tissue donation for the greater Cincinnati area. We also, as part of our mission, go out to the community to educate people on why it's important to register as an organ, tissue, and eye donor. So we are a very mission-based organization. We are one of 58 throughout the United States. Life Center handles the greater Cincinnati area. We have 8 counties in Ohio, 6 in Northern Kentucky, and 2 in Indiana that we cover. So we work with about 34, 35 hospitals, and we try to save as many lives as possible through those amazing gifts of donation.
So a lot has happened over the course of this year, and just in terms of how life has changed with respect to the pandemic. Can you tell our listeners last year, how was Life Center able to help the community?
So in 2019, we had the most organ donors, most organs transplanted, and the most tissue donors than in any year of Life Center's existence. And that's been pretty much the case for the last 6 years in a row. So a lot of that is because of the community outreach work that we do, as well as the relationships that we have within our hospitals, so that when they have a potential donor, they know to call Life Center, and we work collaboratively to speak with the family. And so they're aware of the donation opportunities that they have, whether it's organ, tissue, and or eye.
So I know most people think donation just happens in the hospital, but what you're saying is there's this organization, Life Center. And so tell listeners a little bit about Life Center's role in facilitating that.
Sure. So the federal government in the 80s, when transplantation was really starting to take off, realized that there has to be a separation between the transplant center and the donor families, because they don't want a member of the hospital who had been taking care of somebody's loved one that was in a tragic accident to say, we did everything we could to save your loved one's life, but they would be a great organ donor, or they have this opportunity for organ donation. So it really led to the community thinking that they really do everything they could to save that person's life, and they just want their organs, quote unquote. So the federal government wisely, one of the few things they probably do wisely, so created OPOs, organ procurement organizations, and Medicare determines the territory that we all serve. So there's four in Ohio. So for any potential donor in the greater Cincinnati area, Life Center is the one that coordinates those efforts. So we are the ones that, while we are at the hospital for organ donation and we go and talk to families at the hospital, it is definitely two different teams. One, the people trying to save that person's life. And then when the hospital has done everything that they could and there's still not going to be a change in the outcome, that's when we're brought in and we come in. And while we're a partner of the hospital, we are a distinct organization.
Okay. Okay. And so is Life Center a for-profit, nonprofit?
Yeah. So Life Center and all the 58 organ procurement organizations in the U.S. are nonprofits.
Okay. And then is there, what does oversight look like for organ and tissue donation? Like who's making sure all of the OPOs are doing what they're supposed to be doing, regulations, that sort of thing?
So I always say that Life Center and organ procurement organizations in general are very heavily regulated, but we should be.
Right.
We're transplanting organs from tissue or eyes from one person to another. So we should be heavily regulated. But Medicare is the primary government agency that governs organ donation. Mm-hmm. And the FDA is the government organization that oversees tissue donation.
Okay.
And then there, throughout different associations also monitor us. So the United Network of Organ Sharing maintains the organ wait list. Mm-hmm. We are regulated by them as well to make sure that we follow the list when we have a potential donor to make sure that those organs go to the proper recipients. Mm-hmm. The Association for Organ Procurement Organizations and the Association for the American Tissue Banks also governs us. So there's a wide variety of people that govern us, but like I said, we should be.
Absolutely. So during your time at Life Center, what has been the biggest, I don't know, surprise to you as it relates to organ, eye, and tissue donation?
Well, when I first came here, I just thought that everybody that passes away could be an organ donor. And then to realize that only 1% of the people who die in a manner that they can be an organ donor, die in a manner that allows for the opportunity for donation. So this is not, you know, your 90-year-old grandmother that passes away is unlikely to be an organ donor. People with cancer are unlikely to be an organ donor, while some of them could be a tissue or eye donor. But organ donation is very, very limited in terms of the number, how a person has to pass away in order for that to occur. And just those minimal opportunities that exist, you have to make the most of each one of them. So it really was an eye-opener to me.
Interesting. Because right now we've got about 114,000 people on the national waiting list.
Exactly. And in the United States, last year was the most organs transplanted ever, and there were 36,000 transplants throughout the whole nation. So at least close to a quarter of them are not getting their transplant in any given year. So there's obviously the need is great for those waiting.
So how does living donation factor into that equation?
Yeah, so with living donation, while Life Center or none of the organ procurement organizations are directly involved in that, that's more of a hospital-based. Organ procurement organizations deal primarily with deceased donation. Mm-hmm. But for every living donor, every living donation, that's one less person on the wait list. Mm-hmm. So that when we have a deceased donor opportunity, that's another life that can be saved. So living donation really does impact the wait list in a very positive way.
Yeah. And it seems like over the years, we've definitely seen more people stepping up to saying, you know, and saying, yes, I want to be tested to being, you know, to see if I could be a living kidney donor. That's what you often hear about. And then I know there've been situations, excuse me, where people have been, they've donated a portion of their liver. So I feel like over the course of several years, it's not such a taboo topic to talk exactly. about, which I think is great. What do you attribute that to?
It's awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times you go down the street nowadays and you see a billboard that says, my loved one needs a kidney.
Yeah.
If please register to be, or a kidney donor, call this number. Mm-hmm. You know, you see those all the time, whether it's a yard sign or billboard or on Facebook or any social media platform. I just think it's the awareness of it. And as well as different media outlets sharing those stories.
Yes.
And then seeing the positivity that can come from it. And whether it's a deceased donation or living donation, I think all that plays a part in it. But definitely the community awareness.
Yes. So do you have a personal connection to donation?
Indirectly, yes. So a very good friend of mine who our kids went to grade school together, had a daughter that needed a lung and heart transplant. So this is well before I was involved in Life Center. So we went through that journey with them. They kept us updated. They actually moved their entire family to Philadelphia as she waited for her lung and heart transplant.
Wow.
When she was 2, she received her transplant and she was able to come home and live for a few years and then unfortunately passed away kind of suddenly and unexpectedly right before her 4th birthday. But they were the ones who really opened my eyes to organ donation and the impact. And yes, while I always registered when I went to the BMV, mm-hmm. I never knew a situation that anybody needed that. So that really just opened my eyes. So when I saw the opportunity here at Life Center, I thought, oh, that sounds like a really cool organization. I had no idea it existed, mm-hmm. but I know what that one family friend of ours went through. And wouldn't that be a really good way to help? Yeah. So I applied and here I am.
So in full disclosure to our listeners, Barry and I have worked together for about 15 years now.
That's right.
So I feel like I know him very well and I feel like he knows me very well. So I'm just very excited that he agreed to come on. And
maybe too well.
So you've talked about the different hospitals that Life Center works with here in our service area. How many hospitals actually do transplants? Because not all hospitals do transplants.
Correct. In the greater Cincinnati area, there are 3 hospitals that do transplants. University of Cincinnati Medical Center does everything as far as kidney, pancreas, livers, and hearts. Cincinnati Children's Hospital, which is obviously an outstanding pediatric hospital, does all organs for transplant. And then Christ Hospital does kidneys for transplant.
Okay. Wow.
And all 3 of them have also a very robust living donation program as well.
Okay. All right. So I would imagine that Life Center works very closely, obviously, with all of the hospitals and care facilities in the area, but particularly with the 3 transplant centers.
Absolutely. And while any hospital could potentially have a donor, mm-hmm. only those 3 would actually perform the transplant.
Okay. Okay. That's a great point. Thank you. So let's take a turn here. I want to talk about the coronavirus and how has donation been affected by that? I mean, so we were faced with this crisis in
mid-March.
Mm-hmm. So talk to the listeners about what that has looked like.
Yeah. So I think as everybody is aware, and this happened throughout the United States, as mid-March came and pretty much across the United States, all the shutdown orders came. All hospitals were pretty much stopped all elective surgeries. And hospitals were really limited on who could even enter the hospital because they were so worried about an influx of patients coming into their ICU units because of people with a coronavirus, and how are they going to treat those patients, and how are they going to keep it from spreading to other patients and other areas of the hospital and so forth. So really the hospitals went on lockdown. And with that, because of people staying at home and just all the other factors involved, donation really went down as well because there weren't as many people getting into traffic accidents, or there weren't as many people doing having strokes or whatever.
Wow. So think about the ripple effect that when daily life kind of ceases as we know it to be, how that impacts something like donation.
Yeah, exactly. So throughout the United States, there was a 40% drop in the number of donors during that time for about a 10 or 12 week period.
Wow.
When all the hospitals were really kind of shut down.
Wow. So for Life Center in particular, what did that feel like? What happened during that time, and how did things change operationally?
It really was like everybody else. We were kind of playing it day by day because there really wasn't a game plan or a business continuity plan that dealt with a pandemic. You know, mm-hmm. for a while, especially in the greater Cincinnati area, something that happened within our community was an active shooter downtown in Fountain Square. So yes. I think there was a lot of business continuity plans that went with an active shooter, but I don't think anybody really planned for a pandemic.
Right.
So there really wasn't a game plan, and without knowing where the end would be, every day was different. Mm-hmm. So for us, it was, from a donation standpoint, it was, okay, how do we test potential donors if they have the coronavirus? Mm-hmm. And labs across the United States were scrambling as well to perform such a test. Mm-hmm. And there's really only a handful of labs in all the United States that do these testing even now. So we send ours to a lab in, actually it's Denver, but initially it was in Kansas. So by the time it took to take that specimen, have it delivered to Kansas, and then get the results back, it would take 3 or 4 days.
So that to me is really interesting because we know that there's such a narrow window of time to even do organ recovery in particular. So now you're saying, in addition to that, we've got to add in this testing piece for COVID, and we can't do it here.
Especially at the beginning of March when this thing was all new to everybody.
Yeah.
And everybody was scrambling to see, how are we going to test that we're not transplanting organs from one person to another and also giving them the coronavirus as well. So yeah, for the very beginning of this thing, and I would say for probably 4 to 6 weeks, those tests would be taking days to get the results. And we had one that, a potential donor, that the test came back after waiting 4 days, the test came back inconclusive. So because we couldn't prove that they didn't have it, then that donation opportunity was unable to go forward. So really, you know, that kind of case actually resulted in somebody not getting their life-saving transplant. Right. And there was all kinds of cases like that, not only in Cincinnati, but in the United States, that because of the testing or the timing it took to get the test results, or the test results coming back with inconclusive, or even this hospital would run a test and they would run a secondary test, and one would be negative, one would be positive. So again, because you couldn't prove one way or the other, you had to go with the positive. So there were a lot of donation opportunities that did not occur that would have occurred in the past.
Right.
Because of this pandemic, and the safety of the recipients is foremost in everything that we do, whether it's donation or transplantation. Mm-hmm. So without able to verify that we are not going to give this recipient the coronavirus, you can't go forward.
Right. So from a staffing standpoint, because you talked about, like, obviously we know access to hospitals was very limited, is still very limited. How were staff able to work collaboratively with hospitals during this?
It was extremely difficult, and we were only very limited to the number of people that we were allowed to have in the hospital, and especially on a unit. We're typically, for an organ donor patient, we would have about three people on site. And three people would be sitting in that unit. We would have one, possibly two. Now, they could all three be there, but they couldn't be on the same unit at the same time. Again, just to limit that potential for exposure. So we really had to change everything that we did as well, even the ability to talk to families, because typically that patient who could be a potential donor, we're talking to a few family members at that time. And with the pandemic,
right,
the hospitals were limiting sometimes no family members, or at most one family member. And maybe that family member was the one that, through the hierarchy developed by the states, through state law, that they would not be the legal next of kin. So we had to then approach families. Typically, we approach families for organ donation face-to-face, and we had to do that either over the phone, via Skype, via Zoom. So it really, really changed everything that we did, or how the whole process works.
So I know, and you and I have talked about this, you know, because we do so much of our communication now via Zoom, but there really is no substitute for that face-to-face interaction, particularly if you're talking to a family at, you know, the worst possible time, obviously, for them, and that their loved one has passed away, but they have this unique opportunity. So I know that had to be tough on staff to try to navigate that.
Right. And while virtual meetings are great, especially during this time, they don't take the really place of meeting one-on-one or with a group in person. And that's especially true when you're talking to a family about the possibility of donation. Yeah. Like you said, it's a very difficult time, probably the worst time for that family, mm-hmm. and the sensitivity of it. So to be able to communicate that empathy to the family, especially over the phone or even via a platforms like Zoom or Skype or GoTo or whatever, it definitely makes it more difficult.
Right. So in terms of donation, can you tell our listeners a bit about how that works? So a patient passes away here and they are able to be an organ and tissue donor. How does the list work? Like, so if there's someone, like, how does all that work?
Sure. So the hospital, every hospital in our area, like I said, the counties that we cover in Ohio, Kentucky, and Southeast Indiana, they call Life Center when a patient meets certain clinical triggers that could possibly result in organ donation. And that's how we're notified.
Okay.
So hospital calls us. We have a call center on site here at Life Center. We have at least two people here 24/7, 365, every minute of every day.
To take those calls.
To take those calls.
Because what do you say? Death does not occur.
I always say donation does not occur between 8 and 5 Mondays through Fridays, never on a weekend, never on a holiday. Usually it never occurs except for on a holiday or a weekend. But I kind of say we staff like a firehouse. We have to be ready for the what ifs. Yeah. So it's very similar to that effect. So our call center will take the initial calls directed to the right person to get involved. If it is a, we will have somebody evaluate, probably go on site to evaluate and see if this person is able to be a donor based upon their health and their past medical history and so forth. If they're still, if they still can become a donor and they pass away to being what we call brain dead, in which their organs are functioning, they're on the ventilator, but their brain's not telling them to actually function. Mm-hmm. So if the patient is pronounced brain death, then we are involved. We'll go talk to the family, however that is nowadays, whether it's, we try to do it in person, but again, with the pandemic, we may have to alter how we do that. And then if, when the family says yes, or if that person's a registered donor, then we have another team that comes in to make sure that the organs get from the donor to the proper recipient. Mm-hmm. So that process from beginning to end takes anywhere from 24 to 36 hours on average. Mm-hmm. But when we were waiting to get these test results back, it would take much, much longer.
Right.
So now that we have more rapid coronavirus testing, we're getting those results back anywhere between 6 and 12 hours. So it's not, it's much reduced than before.
So with a patient who is deceased, the coronavirus test, is that a blood test?
It's a swab, just like you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a swab just like you see when you do the drive-by.
Okay, so that testing would be the same for a deceased patient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I had no idea. So that's really interesting. And it's interesting because also we keep hearing about, you know, are there enough tests to go around? And I mean, there just seems to be just this uncertainty and shortage. And so then when you're saying we have to test, obviously for the safety of potential recipients, we have to test these potential donors. I mean, there's a lot going on and it has to be executed in such a small window of time.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, ideally you would not have those conversations in such a sensitive time frame. However, because of the short and narrow time frame that we have to get an organ from one person to another, mm-hmm. so that that recipient has a very good outcome, we have to have those conversations in a very short time frame.
Yeah. So can you talk to us, talk to our listeners a little bit about kind of the data or the numbers, if you will? Barry is a data guy. He's a...
My background is all finance.
Yeah, he's a CPA, right?
No.
No, you're not.
No. Nope.
Okay, but he nope. is a finance guy. He got his MBA. He's...
all my prior positions have pretty much been as a CFO.
Yes.
Or in the finance area.
So Barry likes to dig into the data and talk about trends, which is obviously really helpful when you're trying to figure out what the opportunities are or what are our challenges. And so we've had a lot of discussion over the last few weeks around what we're seeing. Can you share with our listeners some of the highlights or data that stands out to you?
Yeah, so interestingly is when this first started happening, like I said, around mid-March, donation went way down. And like I said, in the United States, it went down about 40%. But through August 1st, it's pretty much back to where it was as of last year, which I think is wow. really interesting. For the region that Life Center is in, which is called the Great Lakes region, which is Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, and Wisconsin, has actually seen the highest increase in donation compared to last year, where places that you would probably suspect, such as New York, New Jersey, the New England states, have seen the biggest decrease. So it really is interesting to see how this has played out throughout the United States. Some are pretty much exactly as they were last year. Some are a little bit up, some a little bit down. But our region, the Great Lakes region or the Midwest region and the New England Eastern region have seen the biggest swings, whether increase or decrease. And I also looked at it from a organ type. So whether it's kidneys, liver, lungs, heart, pancreas, And while most of them are about the same as last year, lungs are much lower than last year. The only thing I could explain that is with the pandemic, because this is an airborne disease,
yes.
As we all know. So I think, unfortunately, those people waiting for lungs are having a more difficult time during this pandemic. So it'll be interesting to see how those trends play out.
Yeah. And we've just, I know in the last couple of weeks, I know I've seen reports about actually two patients who recovered from COVID who actually required lung transplants.
Right. So I think we're going to see an increase in the number of people waiting for a lung transplant.
As a result of COVID?
As a result of COVID, because of, like you said, there's going to be people that recover that may need a lung transplant, but there's also less people getting their life-saving transplant from donation than there was before too. So I think you're going to see that list grow during this time. And hopefully the people with kidneys in need of a kidney or liver or heart, hopefully those start to increase.
So with all of the organs that can be transplanted, what is the organ that is in most, that people need the most?
Obviously kidneys.
Yes.
So of the 114,000 people, give or take, on the national wait list, about 90,000 of those, if not even a little bit more, are waiting for a kidney.
Okay.
And again, if you think about it, that's more people than can sit in Paul Brown Stadium.
Wow.
So, you know, if you're really thinking about it, the need for all donation, but especially kidney donation, is so great, and why living donation can play a big part of that, but also why it's so important to register, whether through the BMV or online or wherever, why it's so important to register as a donor. So should the opportunity present itself, that your family knows what to do.
Absolutely. I think that's, you know, really important to remind people, is that we all have the opportunity to save, change, and enhance the lives of other people through saying yes to registering to be a donor. So thank you for reiterating that point. Okay, so...
Can I just go back to another point that you were making?
Please do.
All right. So when we were talking about the hospitals and some of the difficulty that we experienced nationwide, which is still going on today, was also the shortage of PPE equipment, you know, the personal protective equipment. So that was another reason why donation and transplantation kind of took a backseat, because again, hospitals thought there's going to be this mass influx of people coming into the hospital, and they felt like they did not have enough personal protective equipment for the potential for all the people with the pandemic. So again, we were limited on how many people we could come on site to help facilitate a potential donor. But also there is the worry about how much personal protective equipment are we going to go through for, yes, for this. So we're still seeing somewhat, just like everybody else, a decline in PPE equipment, but that all of this has played a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what, whether it's PPE equipment or, you know, maintaining and kind of keeping a clamps on the spread,
yes,
of the pandemic. So, all of this has played a part in that, and it really has been interesting to see how this has all gone about. And I think it's going to be interesting to see the changes that will occur, so that hospitals in the future are going to gear up for whether it's a second wave or a similar situation.
Yeah, it's been interesting to me that, you know, we live in the United States where we are touted as having, you know, great healthcare. I don't know if that's the term I'm trying to use, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, you know, we offer a very high quality standard of care in treating patients in a variety of diseases and ailments. And it just amazes me how this really kind of paralyzed us as a nation.
Well, I would even say globally, because you know, supply chains. Where do you get the personal protective equipment, and where do you get those supplies, and whatever supply it is? And while some of it may be manufactured in the United States, obviously some of it is manufactured abroad, especially in China, which was "quote unquote" ground zero for the pandemic.
Right.
So then, do you really want something coming into your hospital that came from an area that was the first hit with the pandemic? Because again, you don't know, especially at the beginning, nobody knew how this thing was actually spread.
Right.
You know, can it remain on clothes? Can it remain on boxes? And, you know, we were told when we went to the grocery store to wipe off our packages before we brought them inside and those kind of things. So, it's really has been, you know, kind of like I said before, like almost a daily how things have changed.
It definitely seems like things are changing daily. So we're how many, it's now August. So we're a few months into this.
5 months.
5 months. You're like 5 months, how many days, how many hours, how many minutes. What would you do differently? We've never seen anything like this, at least I don't believe in our lifetime. And then in our field, I don't believe we've ever been hit with something like this. So what would you do differently, you know, as a leader?
I was really looking at it from how would I do it differently from a donation standpoint, or how would we work within the hospitals? And I will say I thought we had pretty good cooperation, really good cooperation from our local hospitals. I mean, they all tried to make sure that donations still occurred, even though we saw a very significant decline in the number of donors that we had from mid-March till pretty much Memorial Day weekend. But I don't think it was the result of missing all these opportunities, and that there were people in the hospital that could potentially become donors and we just weren't aware of them, or the hospital wasn't having to come on site. I don't think that was the reason whatsoever. I just think it was all the different factors of how somebody can potentially pass away to be a donor. Right. Those were not occurring. Right. For one reason or another. And I know some areas saw increases because of overdoses, or some areas saw increases because of strokes. In the greater Cincinnati area, we just did not see that.
Right.
So I don't think it was that we, quote unquote, missed opportunities. I just think they just weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I would do differently is really have just that greater collaboration between the hospitals, and really almost, even though it seemed like we were talking to them daily because things were changing daily, is have a more formal communication process for that, mm-hmm. as opposed to this situation occurred, so how are we going to deal with it?
Right.
So really, for me, the thing I would change is really having that more formal communication process, especially with our transplant centers.
Okay. So let's segue into a different aspect of this, and really kind of the boots on the ground, if you will. I want to talk about the staff. Mm-hmm. And what did you see, or what have you continued to see? As you said, we're 5 months in, and talk to me about the staff at Life Center.
Well, I think rightly so, just like everybody else in the United States, especially at the beginning, there were concerns about, you know, should they be in the hospital, or if I go to a hospital and there's people on the floor with the COVID, will I get it? And, you know, that places a mental strain on people. Rightly so, because again, we did not know what all would occur. Everything was just so new then. So at the beginning, there was definitely some concern about how would we continue to do our jobs and the safety of our staff. But as we've gone along and hospitals have changed how patients with the COVID are placed in the hospitals and then they're separated from other people in the ICUs and so forth, then people became more comfortable with that. And I think everybody now understands that if I follow the guidelines that we all kind of do, wear a mask, wash your hands, you know, wear your personal protective equipment on site, wash your clothes when you get home, all those kind of good things that every one of us should be doing, but taking those precautions that we can then still fulfill our mission of facilitating donation. So the staff has been absolutely wonderful in that regard and making sure donation occurs when the opportunity presents itself. And like I said, across the United States and even for Life Center, we're pretty much doing the same amount of donors that we did this year as we did last year. So,
which I think is really needs to be emphasized. I mean, to go through something like this, again, something unprecedented, and to be able to say that we're, you know, still able to facilitate that.
You know, I think it's a real testament to the passion our staff has toward our mission. And I would say that not only to those doing directly with organ and tissue donation, but the whole organization wide. And I would say that for all 58 organ procurement organizations in the United States. Everybody has a mission first and foremost in our minds. So, you know, we try to find ways to make sure that we fulfill that mission. And I think the staff really came through.
So they're very much heroes in your mind?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. What keeps you up at night as we're working through this?
Again, I think it's the uncertainty because we can't plan for anything.
Right.
Right. Every day is going to be different. We don't know if there's going to be a quote unquote second wave. We don't know what that's going to look like. We don't know when this thing will come to an end. We have the flu season coming up. How is that going to be impacted by this? So there are just so many variables still 5 months into this thing. There doesn't look like they're getting closer to a vaccine, but it's not close. Mm-hmm. I think it would be probably closer to the end of the year. And I'm hoping for that.
Right.
But again, like I said, with the upcoming flu season and schools going back in session and hopefully, fingers crossed, all fall sports going back in session, even though college football may not, kids going back to college and so forth. So again, I just think we don't know enough to limit the exposure. And again, you were trying to open things up on a limited basis or at least on a conservative basis, but the number of people tested positive continues to rise. Mm-hmm. So how does that look? And will we see then as schools get open and sports occur and people get more outside of their home or working from home or wherever they're doing things virtually now? You know, what's that going to look like, especially at the hospitals again? And is that going to be for donation? And will there be more, if more people are tested positive, that means there's going to be less people that could be donors potentially. Mm-hmm. Because we do not transplant any organs from somebody that tests positive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how is that going to impact donation and those waiting for that life-saving transplant? So it's, there's just so many things that we can't say, yes, it will end by December 31st. Right. Yes, we're going to have Christmas just like we did before, or have our family over for Thanksgiving, or all those kind of things that you typically do. We still don't know what that's going to look like.
So how does Barry Massa, Executive Director of Life Center, support staff, support the Life Center team during all of this uncertainty?
So the one thing that I've been trying to do is communicate on a regular basis and at least weekly. And at the beginning, it was pretty much every other day at least. And while I know we did a communication via email, because again, not all of our staff are here at one point. People have on call schedules or work kind of shifts like a hospital. Mm-hmm. So to get that communication out, just to keep them updated of what's going on. Because again, it was changing every day. And just like everybody else, we were trying to work from home. Even our call center did that for a short time. But then they realized it was more productive to be together. So we positioned the call center to be physically distant, 6 feet apart, sanitize their area, sanitize the area for the next person that came in, limited the number of people that came in and out of the call center so that, again, they weren't being exposed. So all those things we've been doing, but the key is to communicate and keep communicating repeatedly to our staff so that they know what's going on, because the worst thing they could have is uncertainty. Okay. And okay, what are we supposed to do? And I want to make sure they, at least for the time period that we can say what's going to occur,
yeah,
what's going on and what's going on at Life Center.
So again, I've been here working with you through this. And for me as a team member, I feel like the thing that resonates with me the most is that you always ask, how are you doing? And you ask that to all of the Life Center family here. And I think that means a lot to people.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel like they're my family.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean, I think just the mental aspect of this pandemic is
it's tough.
In so many ways.
Yeah.
You know, because whether you're working from home and now you're seeing that same four walls every day and you're not having that interaction with other people, which I think is so important.
Yes.
Or, you know, again, you're limiting your contact with others. So yeah, I think the mental aspect of this is more draining than the physical aspect of it.
And this is already, it can be a very emotionally draining.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the fact is that we are dealing with death, but in trying to provide someone with a second chance. And so you're absolutely right. You throw on top of that the uncertainty of all this. So that can be, I think, really mentally difficult and emotionally difficult for a lot of people.
Right. And you know, people try to get support from family members or friends, and now they're limited to their exposure to family and friends. So then where do they get that support? So I think it's really important that we, as much as we can, try to be that support for them.
What would you say to a person who's waiting for a life-saving organ transplant right now?
The best thing you could do is stay as healthy as you can during this time. And again, like we said before, encourage others to register as a organ, tissue, and eye donor, because only through those generous acts of others will people get their life-saving transplant. So the more people that are encouraged to register and are registered, the more potential there will be for donation, and then the more potential there is that that person will get their life-saving transplant. So it is a very circular process, if you will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So as we wrap up, what we do with each episode is we have what we call an honor moment. And so today's honor moment is for all of the frontline staff within all of the organ procurement organizations across the country that are working tirelessly to facilitate organ, eye, and tissue donation. And then also to the staff that are working hard to do the outreach and education, because everything's different, right? As you said, it's constantly changing. And so we're having to change that. So I just want to take a moment to honor them and to honor all the leaders as well. So you in particular for what you do and just showing up every day. So thank you.
Thank you. And I echo your sentiments because while we always think of nurses and physicians as frontline healthcare workers, the people who work with donation, organ and tissue donation, and even the people within our call center are really frontline people working and doing this throughout this whole pandemic. So hats off to them.
Really, it's you're absolutely right. Most people, I don't think, and I'm glad that's why we're having this conversation, because I don't think most people realize that those people even exist, you know, and how this all comes together. So I think that's really good. We're going to conclude. We've got some questions for Barry, just so that people can get to know him a little bit better. Not that you're doing this much right now, but what's one thing you take on every trip? I think it's Tic Tacs, but that's just me.
I do have a habit of Tic Tacs. Yes, that's probably it. Or I would say a Yeti because I like my hot tea.
Ah, yes. Good one. What makes you most happy?
My family and my friends.
Particularly those beautiful grandbabies.
That's right. They are a lot of fun.
So what's your favorite restaurant?
I'd say the Incline Public House in the Price Hill Incline District.
What do you order when you're there?
A hamburger, of course. But there are a lot of great places to go for really have good hamburgers around Cincinnati. Midway Cafe in Fort Thomas. We've been going to a food truck called Chloe's. That's been pretty good. Just a lot of really good places.
Okay. What's your favorite band?
U2.
Favorite song?
Beautiful Day.
I love that.
Now, I do have a lot of good songs I like. I think Hell's Bells. My AC/DC is probably the best rock song with Metallica's Enter the Sandman. Those are on there too.
Nice. Okay. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share?
The only thing I'm going to say again and just reiterate is the passion and dedication of the Life Center staff and, again, of all organ procurement organization staff. But since I see this directly, is our Life Center staff and everything that they've done during this pandemic has been outstanding. And, you know, even to wearing masks while we're inside the office, you know, making sure that things are wiped down while they're in the office. They just take into everything really well and adapted really well. And I'm just very proud of everything that they've accomplished.
Well, Barry, I want to thank you so much just for spending time really talking about all of this, kind of the behind the scenes things that have to happen in order for lives to be saved. And I think that listeners will learn a lot. I know for me, the biggest takeaway has been how important relationship is and just in everything that we do. And hearing you talk about the making sure we're communicating and over communicating and just in, you know, talking with the hospitals and that sort of thing. I think that's just super important.
Absolutely. And I would say the relationships that we have within the hospitals in the greater Cincinnati area have been outstanding. And, you know, we couldn't do it without them. So those relationships have been great. And we very much appreciate all that they do as well. And again, just like we talked many times, it's really about the importance of registering as an organ, tissue, and eye donor and raising that awareness.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to This Thing Called Life. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcast to make sure you get updates on all new episodes. And we would truly appreciate it if you would share, like, or give us a review to help us grow.